Hello and welcome to episode one of Up to Date, a property law podcast brought to you by the junior barristers at Tanfield Chambers. Tune in each week for our essential property updates so you're up to date. In each 15-minute episode, we'll summarise the most important developments in the property law world. We'll look at new laws and procedures coming into force, court and tribunal operations, and any changes on the horizon too. In the second half of our episodes, we'll summarise and discuss a selection of new judgments. We will be bringing you a regular short property update. Listen to this podcast for the key aspects of a changing landscape. Today is the 11th of June. I'm Katie Gray, and this week I'm joined by Deanne Dolliver. This week we start off by explaining the extension of Practice Direction 51Z, which now stays most possession proceedings until the 23rd of August. We consider the Court of Appeal guidance on that practice direction. We look at where we are now with possession claims in the County Court, and we consider how things might look in September. We'll also look in on how the Property Chamber of the First Tier Tribunal has dealt with its cases after initially adjourning most hearings at the start of lockdown. So, Deanne, hello.
Hi, Katie.
So I think the main thing that we need to talk about that's happened this week is that the government's confirmed that Practice Direction 51Z is to be extended.
Yeah, that's right, Katie. So I'm assuming that it will be well known to people listening to this podcast that since the end of March, it's not been possible to have a possession hearing in the county courts. And the reason for that is because Practice Direction 51Z was brought in to stay the hearing of all possession claims. Now, initially, that stay was drafted to last until the 5th of June, but it was always on the cards that it could be extended. And on Friday of last week, Robert Jenrick, the Housing Secretary, confirmed that it's going to be extended, and the government's itself confirmed that's going to be until the 23rd of August.
So what does that mean for landlords, and are there any exceptions to the rule?
So it's obviously fairly bad news for landlords who are trying to get possession, because it means that they're not going to get before the courts any earlier than the 23rd of August. So no matter what kind of possession claim you're having, even if it's completely unrelated to coronavirus and even if it's been going on for quite a long time, the courts are just not hearing any possession claims. So obviously that practice direction is a fairly blunt instrument, and I think we understand perfectly why it's being used, because that's the easiest way of making sure that people aren't going to be evicted rather than trying to amend every bit of statute regulating very many different kinds of tenancies. And there are some unintended consequences of using that kind of blunt instrument which have had to be ironed out. So one of the exceptions is really shortly after that practice direction came out, there was a subsequent practice direction, 51SZ, which said trespassers who are persons unknown can be evicted and interim possession orders can also still go ahead.
But even that's quite interesting, isn't it? Because it's the only the persons unknown exception that applies in relation to trespassers hearings. If you know the names even of your trespassers, you're still, it seems, prevented by the practice direction from evicting them, which just seems mad and another example of the blunt instrument that you're talking about.
Yeah, so clearly what the legal effect of all of this is going to be essentially to prioritise security of occupancy, no matter who you are, what your precise facts are, unless you really are a squatter or someone who's broken in, who's completely unknown to the landlords. So very broad ranging rule.
Yeah, and we saw that, I think, in the two cases that have troubled the Court of Appeal in the last few weeks in this matter. One was Arkin and Marshall, and the other was Okoro and Hackney, both of which confirmed that the stay would only be lifted in very, very exceptional circumstances. And Okoro and Hackney also confirmed that it applied to appeals of possession orders as well. So very wide ranging.
Yeah, that's right, Katie. And in Arkin, you also had a case where the parties had agreed directions and didn't think that a stay should apply to them. And the Court of Appeal was very clear. It's a judgment that's been called completely clear and unequivocal by the Housing Law Property Association, in fact, in saying this is going to be the kind of practice direction to which, if there are any exceptions, they would be so exceptional that we, the court, can't even think of any examples that would fall outside of it. So at least that is extremely clear for the lawyers looking at it. The Court of Appeal is saying it's a no-go zone. Don't try and appeal us. It's not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, what really comes out of Arkin, I think, is the dual role of the practice direction. So on the face of it, the obvious point of it is to protect public health, but it's quite clear that the secondary purpose of the practice direction is to ease the listing burden, particularly on the county court, as much as possible, because just the vast majority of county court work is possession work. And you'll know as well as I do, Deanne, that if you go to a county court on an ordinary possession day, you will just be faced with a waiting room full of people in a bulk list, and there's no possibility of any kind of social distancing. So the court's just had to prioritise its urgent work. It's had to make sure that the source of all of that bulk work is stopped, put completely on hold, and really that's come, it seems to me, at the expense of landlords and mortgagees. And the real interesting question, I think, and I think we'll let's discuss this in a moment, is where this is all going to leave landlords and tenants in the autumn when the stay expires.
Yeah, that's right, Katie. And certainly rent associations that are protecting the interests of tenants have a similar concern about what's going to happen at the end of this, which is, it's a stay is a stay. So you're only deferring a problem until a later date. And then isn't there just going to be a deluge of possession actions that then will have to be dealt with? And that's not necessarily good news for renters in a different way.
So looking to the future then, the government made some pretty big promises to tenants in March about how coronavirus was not going to see them evicted from their homes.
Yes, they did. And interestingly, that was a really broad promise, but it's now been reined back quite significantly in the latest statement. So when the housing secretary made his announcement last week, he said, "No one will be evicted from their homes this summer due to coronavirus." So it's gone from "no one's going to be evicted at all" to "only for the summer will you not be evicted for this reason." And that's probably in recognition of the fact that that first promise was just something that couldn't be delivered at all.
Yeah, we're also seeing how the government is proposing to deliver this promise, because the same statement says, "Where tenants do experience financial difficulties as a result of the pandemic, the government is clear that landlords and tenants should work together and exhaust all possible options, such as flexible payment plans, which take into account a tenant's individual circumstances, to ensure that cases only end up in court as an absolute last resort." So I don't know about you, Deanne, but I just don't see how that's going to work practically whilst Section 21 is still in force. I know that we've got some quite stringent restrictions on the use of Section 21, but it's going to still be available to some landlords, at least. And if it's used, it won't matter that the tenant is in rent arrears, because if a valid notice is served, the landlord has an absolute no-fault right to possession. And we did see last year, didn't we, that the government was going to repeal Section 21. I wonder if we might see that brought forward, because that's certainly what the Labour Party had been advocating for in their five-point plan.
Yeah, and if the Conservatives and the Labour Party are in sync on this, it does rather suggest that maybe the Housing Act has gone past its sell-by date. It's over 30 years old now, and it was designed in a specific context to meet specific needs that perhaps aren't so vital anymore. So the government at that time, in the light of right to buy and the fact that there was less social housing stock, was really trying to encourage private landlords to put their properties on the rental market. And what landlords then were very worried about was the fact that they might not be able to get their properties back. So that's when no fault Section 21 evictions came in. And obviously, that's always going to be important and a consideration. But in the light of what we've got going on now, perhaps that is not the most important consideration.
Yeah, what do you think of this idea of landlords working with tenants to create payment plans and not to issue proceedings unless it's absolutely necessary? I mean, that just seems to me, at least, to ignore the reality of the situation with the rented sector in this country. Because what's the point of agreeing a payment plan if there are 2 months' rent arrears anyway, so that you can obtain a mandatory possession order? And how do you even make a payment plan binding on both parties? You know, what consideration is the landlord giving for extending the rent arrears and extending the time for payment over a longer period?
I agree with you, Katie, and it goes back to what you were saying just a minute ago, because the reality is that if the law isn't changed, then it's hard to see what effect or influence that guidance can have. Because if you're a judge sitting in the county court and you've got to apply the law on the facts that you've got in front of you, if you've got a valid Section 21 notice, then it's mandatory for you to make a possession order. And if ground 8 is made out, then it's mandatory for you to make a possession order. And that guidance doesn't change any of that. It might have an effect on your application of the discretionary ground, but it seems as though they're not really what's the concern here anyway, because even without that guidance, I think judges would have taken the coronavirus into account
Yeah,
anyway.
and d discretionary grounds and payment plans have always gone hand in hand, haven't they? So that's
Yeah.
really nothing new. Well, let's look into our crystal balls then and try to make some predictions about what we might see in terms of changes to the law come the end of August. My prediction is that we see potentially an amendment to Ground 8 to provide either that it becomes a discretionary ground when there are coronavirus related arrears, or that the arrears that you're taking into account in order to work out whether the threshold is met are not included in the calculation when those arrears relate to coronavirus. And I mean, that's obviously going to lead to arguments about what constitutes coronavirus arrears.
Yes.
And I get the cost of that's going to fall on landlords as well, but that's my prediction.
I think that's quite a that would be quite a neat way of putting the coronavirus pandemic into the statutes that we've already got without a wholesale redesign of the system. And I mean, if the whole system isn't redesigned, perhaps it will be, because as we were saying a minute ago, it looks as though the tide was moving anyway towards giving rental tenants more security of tenure in recognition of the fact that it's harder for people to get on the housing ladder and people aren't renting as a short-term step anymore, but long-term. So perhaps the whole statute might be repealed and something else put in place. So I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, thinking radically then, as you clearly are, Deanne, what else might we see? I mean, there are precedents, aren't there, for rent controls during national emergencies. So in World War One, that was really the start of the Rent Acts, with the rent controls that were imposed then to prevent profiteering. I wonder whether we might see the same thing now. And if we do see that, what's the effect of that going to be on the available housing stock? Because historically, we've seen that introducing controls on landlords, as we are doing now, tends to lead to properties not being available for letting. So, finally, we did say that we would update you on how the County Court and the First Tier Tribunal are dealing with things in the current crisis. For the County Court, the Master of the Rolls has set up a working group on possession proceedings to plan how those hearings can resume safely once the stay is lifted in August. So the results of that will be really interesting to see. And Deanne, in the FGT, the picture's much the same.
Yes, Katie. So the tribunal has its current guidance available online. And in summary, what that says is there's going to be no face-to-face hearings until autumn. And the anecdotal evidence that we've got is that the FTT is now moving to list quite a lot of hearings wherever it can by video. So even though there's no face-to-face hearings until autumn, if you've got an urgent case in particular, or there's any other reason you want to get on, the FTT is taking quite a pragmatic view and doing what it can to get things listed. So things are finally moving along after quite a slow start at the start of the lockdown.
That's a positive note to end on then. Well, thanks, Deanne. That's everything for this first episode. We hope you join us again next time. The cases that we talked about today were Arkin and Marshall and Hackney London Borough Council under Coro. They're both 2020 decisions of the Court of Appeal. If you want to hear any more about Arkin, try tuning in to episode 2 of the Tanfield Talks podcast, where that case is discussed in more detail by Michael Walsh, who represented the appellant. In the meantime, please tweet us at UpToDatePodcast to get in touch, or if there's anything else you'd like us to cover in the next episode. Tune in next time for a new episode, and we'll keep you up to date.